My name is Sarah and I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is November the 15th of 2016. I have a sponsor in a home group and I have sponsored other women in the program. Thanks, Sam, for asking me to come out here. It was a beautiful drive. You guys have been very welcoming. I ate a really good brownie. So it's going to be a good talk. I'm pretty nervous. I haven't been feeling particularly sherry lately. Like, I'll go in like waves where I love to share and then other ones where I'm just like, So we'll just see what comes out. But like, there was a reason I was asked to be here, and I'm just like happy that I get to share my experience with you guys and get to be here. It's fun. And I am an alcoholic. Like, when I start drinking, I can't stop. I'm powerless over alcohol, you know, and I'll guess I'll just, like, start at the beginning. So when I was a kid, I grew up in a very nice home, you know. It was in McLean, Virginia. I live in Falls Church. Why did I just say that? It's, like, weird. Yeah, I grew up in Falls Church, Virginia, and to a really nice family. You know, I, like, went to Fairfax County Public Schools. It's, like, a relatively wealthy area. Like, I got everything I wanted. But for some reason, I just never felt right with myself. Like, I always felt like I was, like, very different than everyone around me. Like, everybody hated me, but I didn't care because I hated them. You know, just very separate from other people. Like, that anxious apartness they describe in the book. Like, I just remember, like literally in elementary school, like, seeing people who, like, were, like, talking to one another, and it seemed like they knew what they were doing, and I just felt like that was, like, inaccessible. Like, I could never be like them, you know? Like, I was just, like, different, and there's no reason why an 11-year-old should feel like that. I also had some turmoil in my family. Like, I experienced, like, a little bit of abuse when I grew up, and that made me feel very different and definitely was an excuse for me to, like, drink, you know? Like, I always made that an excuse to drink, like, an excuse why my parents couldn't bother me about my drinking. It's like, you let this stuff happen to me when I was a kid, you know? It just made me feel, like, different. Like, the other kids didn't have to deal with that when they were at their house, so, like, I was, you know, different and, like, yeah, just, like, feeling, like, very apart from. I also, like, was obsessive about things. Like, I was obsessive about alcohol from a young age. Like, I was obsessed with playing, like, computer games, and I was obsessed with swim team and, like, obsessed with, like, you know, just, like, prestige and, like, doing well in school and, like, all of these things to, like, make me feel better. Like, I definitely, like, have, like, a God-sized hole that I've, like, always been trying to, like, fill with, like, anything, but particularly alcohol. I took my first drink when I was about 12. I was on a family vacation to Italy. We went there for a couple of weeks, and we were visiting my dad's old professor with Mr. Gibson. He was, like, this strange 98-year-old man, and we were, like, at his house, and he was, like, feeding us dinner, and in Italy, it's legal to drink when you're a minor, so he had all this champagne, and my parents didn't drink very much. Like, I didn't know very much about alcohol. I wasn't somebody who, like, you know, like, was, like, fascinated by it from a young age. I just, for some reason, like, when he offered it to me, I was like, this sounds cool, like, why not? And I just remember feeling, like, so anxious at that outing, like, originally, just feeling, like, really tight to my stomach, like I always did, and just the effect produced by alcohol, because, like, when I took that first sip, like, I just wanted more, and, like, I felt like I could breathe, like, my shoulders could go down, and, like, everything was, like, all right, and I was all right, and I was okay. And I could interact with, like, all of these people and be just fine. Like, all of, like, the tension I was, like, carrying around, it just melted. And that's something I really related to when I came into AA, because I had a tough time seeing that I was an alcoholic and I needed to come around a lot before I could get sober and really relate. But one thing I remember hearing in meetings when people talked about, like, really relating to was just, like, the effect produced by alcohol, like, letting my, like, shoulders sink and finally feeling like I could talk to people, like, I was just, like, okay in the world, like, I was on the same plane as everybody else, and that's, like, what I experienced. And I also experienced what our book refers to as the phenomenon of craving, like, the first night, because once I started drinking, I just wanted more. Like, whenever I drink, I just want more, and it's not even, like, every time I drink, like, I just go all out, and I, like, just can't stop drinking, and, like, I end up in a blackout. It's, like, I just, like, really don't know, you know? Like, every time I got thirstier, it's, like, I can't predict what will happen to me when I drink. In this instance, I just drank, like, 3 glasses of champagne and just went back to the hotel. Like, it was, like, I was 12, so, you know. But, but anyway, so that, like, night stuck with me, but I didn't drink for a couple more years. I was in middle school, like, you know, just being awkward in middle school, like, going around, being uncomfortable even more. And, like, it just, but as soon as, like, I went to high school and there were people with drugs and alcohol, I immediately, like, was attracted to them. You know, like, I feel like I am attracted to shady characters naturally, people that are doing things that I want to do, you know, which is drink and party and do sketchy things like shoplift and like go out at night. Like that's like what I wanted. And I like was attracted to those people at the beginning of high school, and I hung out with mostly like, you know, dudes who were way older than me and like seniors. Then I just started partying, you know, like, and they weren't really cool parties. They were like me and like two people in a house, like calling it a party, like drinking, like, you know, your parents don't know you're there. You know, it was like that at the beginning. And like every time I drank though, like, I don't know, like I can't really describe it because I didn't really know that other people felt very different than I did when they drank alcohol. Like whenever I drank alcohol, it didn't make sense to me to stop. I only have one, you know. I like wanted to like drink as much as possible. Isn't that what everyone did? That's like when I drank to get drunk. You know, I never drank to like hang out with friends or do anything. Like the point of drinking was to get drunk for me. Like any other like point to drinking doesn't make any sense to me even now. Like I like go to like parties with people. I had to go to like one party with people at my job, like at a, like, and they were just like sipping like wine, and it didn't make like any sense to me. And I got sober when I was 20, so I've never had a legal drink. I had one. I was in Canada on a senior trip, and it was in Quebec. Like, I haven't had a legal drink, so it just doesn't make sense to me that people can just have one or, like, leave it alone. Like, that idea just is foreign. But, yeah, in high school, it started out, like, on the weekends. You know, it was, like, a progressive thing, and every time I would get trashed, you know, and embarrass myself, and I started having consequences, like, fairly early on. Like, I remember I went out for a weekend. I had like this bad bender, and then my mom had to pick me up somewhere, and she was like really mad at me because I was hanging out with a boy, and like I just like I was like miserable already, you know, at the end of those. Like I just felt like so ashamed of myself, and in front of my mom I took like a handful of Tylenol and I like swallowed them all, and I like tried to overdose in front of my mother, which is very selfish, just FYI. And I ended up going to the hospital and getting my stomach pumped, and they tried to send me to this, they sent me to a drug counselor, right? And I lied to her. I was like, this is all, you know, this was totally new to me. It was experimental, you know, I was peer pressured, you know, whatever lie I could tell to protect my drinking. Like I always like was dishonest to protect my drinking. That was a given. And, she sent me to like this mental health IOP, and, it was like a daily kind of thing. And I remember the first day I got kicked out. I got kicked out the first day because I left during the lunch. We were allowed to go to like 7-Eleven or like to get lunch somewhere, and I met like these like older guys, and I immediately like got drunk with them and like another girl, and then they kicked me out of the IOP, and then I just like went back to doing exactly like what I was doing, you know. And trying to think, like high school, I just got into so many crazy things that really upset my parents. Like my like priority was to get drunk and like to use outside substances as well, you know. It was like my priority. Like anything that stood in my way, I didn't care about. Like I just like I only cared about feeling better and about partying and getting drunk. That's all I cared about. And I just got myself into like so many crazy situations, like, and really hurt my parents. Like a big part of my like 8th and 9th step was my family, because I like hurt the people closest to me a lot, especially getting sober so young. And like they were definitely like the punching bags. And I remember my sophomore year of high school, I was hanging out with like some strange figures. It was like a 24-year-old man, and he told me that like we were drinking, and he told me that he would get me a gram of Molly for Christmas. And I was like, that's awesome, gram of Molly for Christmas, all right. And this is an AA meeting. Like I definitely like am an alcoholic. Like once I start drinking, I can't stop. And once I stop, I don't know when I'm gonna start again. And like I experienced the phenomenon of the craving, the mental obsession, the physical allergy described in the Big Book, but drugs are part of my story too. And like I ended up doing drugs with this guy, and then I got like, and I was really drunk, and I went home that night, and then I snuck back out of my parents' house, and I put on this like strange like ball gown kind of dress to like for a night out on the town. It was like weird. And then I like went back to this like guy's house, and like he was just, it was, like, crazy. Like, he was, like, 24, like, probably mentally deranged, you know? He had, like, a pet rat. Like, he made a plan to, like, A, break into the psych ward and smuggle my friend in drugs, and also to get married. Like, that, well, I'm, like, the forefront. And, like, needless to say, my dad ended up picking me up at a Burger King at, like, 5 in the morning, and this guy, like, followed me, and he was, like, I want to marry your daughter. It's like Christmas Eve. I'm like 16 years old. And my dad's like, get out of here. And then I like went back to my house. And 2 hours later, this guy bikes to my house. And he's like, I want to marry your daughter. I can provide for her. I'm a sports medicine major at Old Dominion University. And they were like horrified. And I like put them into situations like this, like all the time with like strange figures. And I didn't see my part. I was like, it's not my fault. They're weird. Like, just like they were just get so, like, I just never saw my part in anything, you know, like I was always like the victim. It was somebody else's fault. Like everyone needed to just get off of my back, you know? And, like it just progressed like that. Like, my junior year, I got like really involved in like the mental health system and stuff. And like, I was like dry for a while and I was like going to therapy and like, I kept having consequences and I was like, so miserable that year, and like I just didn't drink very much that year. Like I was so focused on like school and everything, and I just remember feeling more miserable than ever, because like, take away my solution, I'm just like an anxious ball of nerves. I feel very different again, you know, like I can't interact with anybody. I had like very limited amounts of like friends and stuff. And then my senior year, I got surgery on my back, and I had scoliosis growing up. I had like a 62 degree curve in my spine. And I had to get that, like, surgically repaired, so I did that, and that got me, like, really back into, like, drinking, because I was prescribed a bunch of, like, outside goods that I really liked, and what that did was it got me into, like, this deeper, kind of darker partying lifestyle than I'd ever been, because people wanted what I had, and I wanted what they had, and I started drinking pretty much, like, every single day from that point on. And my senior year, I crossed a lot of moral boundaries that I just never thought I'd cross. I started like skipping school every day. I started cheating. Like I snuck out of my house like every single night, and my parents never knew where I was. I never contacted them. Like my mom, you know, she's a mom. Like she would want me to like be home for like Christmas, like obviously. And I decided instead of like staying home for Christmas, I was going to go to Seattle with a friend I had met like a week ago to go and get drunk like the entire holiday break. And I just took the Amtrak out there and had like a crazy like bender like couple of weeks. And she was like horrified. She had no idea where I was. And that's like who I am, like, you know, when I'm out there. And like even sober, like I'm so selfish. Like I'm only focused on like what I want. And like how I'm gonna get what I want, and like anyone that stands in my way, I'm just gonna like do that. And like the book says, selfishness and self-centeredness is the root of my problem, you know, because it is. Like on my own, without a spiritual solution, I can't see past my own face. You know, I'm just like so self-centered, so in the bondage of self. I only care about getting what I think will make me happy, and getting drunk. So I was just causing that kind of damage, and it was just getting unmanageable. You know, it was getting so unmanageable, and like. I didn't really want to stop yet, though. I was always a good student, you know. I would always keep my grades pretty high. I'm, like, naturally good at school. I've always been a hard worker, so I thought that, like, because I still had a job and I had straight A's, even though I was acting like that, that no one could tell me, like, to stop drinking, because, like, what can you point to in my life that makes you think I need to stop drinking? Like, that was, like, it was kind of like I was living, like, a double life. Like, I had a job, I had school, and then at night I was just, like, partying and, like, being, like, a bad person. And, like, so I didn't want to stop yet. And, like, even though, like, things were getting worse, you know, like, I could see that, like, things were getting worse. Like, I got arrested that year. Like, I was, like, pretty in touch with the fact that I was being really shady, you know. And I don't know. The summer before my senior year, I was drinking a lot, right? I was, like, drinking every day. My friend Mason was having all these parties at his house every night in Great Falls, and I'd pretty much sneak out and drink at those parties and make a fool of myself, like, every night. And, like, you know, I was just getting more and more, like, feeling more and more lonely, feeling more and more depressed, feeling more and more just, like, you know, miserable. Because, like, when I'm out there, like, I'm pretty much miserable, too, you know? Like, I just, like, it's, like, every day, it's, like, you kind of wake up, you focus on how you're going to get drunk, you know, that's, like, all in the forefront of your mind. You go out, you embarrass yourself, you wake up again, and then you just do it again and again and again. And I just remember that summer particularly, and I don't know. And then at the end of the summer, I was hanging out with, like, my ex-boyfriend, and we went to Rehoboth Beach to stay at his parents' house, and I, like, was drinking, you know, at his parents' house and making, like, causing a ruckus and, like, yelling at him and, like, just being, like, a lot, you know. And then I remember, like, later on, he was like, Sarah, I don't like you anymore. I was like, you don't like me? And I, like, ran in front of, like, a moving car when I was drunk. And that guy was, like, horrified, and he, like, called my parents, and my parents were like, Sarah, like, what's going on? And, like, I had plans to go to Virginia Tech after that. I got into Virginia Tech, and I was planning on going to college. They were like, maybe you shouldn't go to college. Like, this guy is saying that you did this. I was like, no, it'll be all right. And I'll just get it together. I'll go to college. So then I went to college, and things just, like, I was just doing exactly what I was doing before. Like, it was that. It was, like, false promises, you know, like, I'll get you off my back. Pretty much that was, like, the only reason I would promise anything about my drinking was to just get you off my back and, like, leave me alone. And I went to Virginia Tech, and, you know, nothing got better. I joined one club. It was Students for Sensible Drug Policy. I had a 9 a.m. class. I kind of forgot I had that class because I just never attended. I just drank all the time. I had, like, multiple handles of, like, disgusting Burnett's in my closet. And nothing got better. Like, I, like, can give you a picture of me at Virginia Tech. I went to a frat party with this guy. And a strange fraternity ritual that they have is they have a party called a fifth and a friend, where, like, apparently you're supposed to be tied to, like, this guy until you guys both mutually finish a fifth. And, like, I went to his house. I finished the fifth before we even left, and I was just, like, tied to him, like, falling over. Like, and that's, like, the way I drink, you know? Like, all for me. Like, if you don't drink like that, it doesn't make sense, you know? And nothing got better. And I had this roommate, right? My freshman roommate. And I pretty much horrified her. Like, me and my friend Rochelle would, like, steal her things, you know? She'd wake up with me, like, drinking next to her at, like, 7 in the morning, and she'd be like, Sarah, and I'd be like, you want some? And she just, like, and I would talk shit about her to, like, everyone in our building and, like, eat all of her food. And I just, like, scared her, you know? Like, I spooked her, and then I would just, I had, like, all these, I remember all these things I would say to her, too. I was like, you just don't get it. I'm really depressed, and I'm an alcoholic. Like, just things like that. And, like, she told me at the end that she had to take her laptop around with her everywhere because she was scared I was going to steal it. And at the beginning of college, I got, like, one conduct referral because I was out drunk, and I got a drunk in public, and that was, like, my first strike. And then my roommate reported me eventually to student conduct, which I had a lot of problems, like, seeing my pardon at first coming to AA. I was like, what? No, she was being unfair. She got me kicked out of college. Like, I had no capacity to see my pardon anything. And yeah, so she reported me to student conduct, and I got kicked out of college after 8 weeks. And then I went home, and I was pretty sad, you know, because the two things I talked about earlier that I held up to, like, protect my drinking were school and work. And I lost one of them, so I could start to maybe see that my drinking was a problem. There was, like, a little niche in my armor. Like, I was starting to kind of see it, right? And I was, like, home, and all of my friends who I thought drank just like me, who were drinking with impunity, were still at school, and I was, like, home alone, and I was wondering how I had gotten there, and no one was home, so I was pretty lonely. I didn't know who to hang out with, and a friend I had gone to some concerts with in high school made a Facebook status about how he had 9 months sober, and I messaged him. I was like, that's great, and I started talking a little bit about what was going on with me. And he invited me to my first AA meeting, and that was in October of 2015. And I went, and what I saw was a bunch of happy people who talked about, like, having, like, the same kind of problems that I had, who now seemed better. And I was very attracted to what you guys had. I didn't do what you guys did at first, but I was attracted to what you guys had. I could see my life was unmanageable, right? I could see that my life was unmanageable. Like, everything, I was kicked out of, you know, I was kicked out of school, I was, like, home, like, everything was unmanageable. So I could see that, but, like, I didn't really understand that I was paralyzed. I didn't have a first step here for, like, a long time, and I continued to drink. And, I don't know, I didn't work the steps. It's hard for me to talk about this time period because I was very befogged, and I'm not sure I was doing this consciously, not working the steps, because I just, like, I don't know, I was very befogged. I, like, had a lot of my own ideas. Like, people were, like, telling me to work the steps, certainly, but I just didn't, I couldn't put two and two together. I couldn't hear anything people had to say, you know? And I got a sponsor, though, because the girls in the meetings, they had the saints, they had the sponsor, and I just felt like I should do what they do, you know? I certainly enjoyed the social aspect. Like, I enjoyed that people went out and they had did fun things, and like I didn't feel so like alone, you know. But I like wasn't ready to do what we do here. So I had this like sponsor and name who I never called, right? And I like refused to like work the steps. I like wrote like three, because I had like a different formatting of like my first step than like I did this time working with them. But I did like three questions for the first step. And then I stopped, like, immediately, and that year I just kind of kept drinking, you know. I would, like, not want to drink, like, I keep going to the meetings, like, the primary purpose is, like, not, never mind. Anyway, like, I, like, wanted to not drink, and I don't know, I just didn't stop drinking because I didn't do any of the work that we do here. Like, in order for me to not drink today, I need to, like, work a spiritual program of action. Like, I wasn't doing that, and I would just, like, go to the meeting, and then I would, like, somehow go back out, and I didn't, like, know what would happen. I couldn't put two and two together, but it was, like, if I wasn't working a program, I'd somehow end up with those old friends drinking again, and it was, like, pretty confusing and, like, disheartening. Mm-hmm. But, like, I would go out for, like, you know, a couple days, and, like, shit would go bad, and then I'd come back to the meeting, and I still wouldn't do anything, and that was, like, there was pretty much 9 months of that, and, that year I got to see a lot about like my own powerlessness, because even though I like wanted to stop drinking, I would like try to go to the meetings, I couldn't stop drinking. Like I would end up going back out again and things would keep getting worse, you know? And I like didn't understand that at first. Like I had a tough time seeing I was an alcoholic at first, because like I had a lot of like problems with drugs too. And that like kind of made it hard, because it was like I didn't particularly relate with alcoholism at first, because I saw myself very much as like a drug addict. And I didn't really see what alcoholism, like, really was. Like, I remember before I got sober this time, I was reading finally with a sponsor about what, like, an alcoholic was. And we were reading the doctor's opinion and the first, you know, four chapters of the big book. And then I finally, like, related to alcoholism, because I had no idea. I thought it was, like, a man under a bridge with a paper bag, you know. I didn't know what an alcoholic was. But, like, I had related to the phenomenon of craving, you know. Like, when we start drinking, I can't stop. Like, once I start drinking, I absolutely can't stop. I know that to like as a fact, and like whatever resolve I have like to stop drinking, I don't know when I'm going to start drinking again. Like whatever resolve I have, it won't mean anything, because I'll just forget, you know, I'll just forget the pain of yesterday and I'll start drinking again. That has happened to me like over and over. And I remember relating to that story about the guy drinking, was it whiskey and the milk? And like, yeah, I remember really relating to the guy with the whiskey and the milk. I was like, how did this happen? Like, all my rationalization somehow getting back to the drink. Like, I remember, like, reading that distinctly and relating to that. And, like, yeah, that helped me, like, really identify, like, reading with a sponsor. Like, I can't stress enough about how much, like, having a sponsor has helped me, because, like, I couldn't figure anything out, you know. I couldn't even, like, read the book at first. Like, I, like, read all the old English, and it, like, made no sense, and it was just kind of like, what? And, like, having a sponsor, like, really helped. Like, none of the steps, especially like 3, 6, and 7, like even now it's like, ooh, and like, you know, it's like none of it made sense to me. I like really needed someone to walk me through. Like I needed people to teach me how to dress. Like I needed people to teach me how to like go to the bank. I needed people to teach me how to go to work, you know, like I needed like all of that. And that's, that come from people in the rooms. But I was talking about my in and out period, and yeah, during that period, I just had a lot of benders, you know. I would go out, and I would drink, and then I would come back to the meeting, cycle. And for some reason, this time around, I, like, woke up from that bender, and I had, like, a like gift of desperation that they describe in the book. I just, like, saw really vividly that morning that the way I was living, the way I was drinking, like, nothing was going to get better. Like, me living my life according to, like, me, you know, like nothing was going to get better. Like me running off of solely my own ideas. Like I needed to like listen to somebody else. And it just like finally kind of clicked. I like didn't know that was happening at the time. I knew I was like sad that I had drank it again. I didn't know how I had like done that. I was just like willing for like a split second, you know. And I called my sponsor, and I just got really involved from there. I don't really know how to explain it. Like I got 9 service positions. You don't need to do that, but that's what I did. I started working the steps again with her, because we had gone through 1 through 5 originally, but I drank again. And I started going through the steps more thoroughly and more, like, thoroughly actually trying to, like, look at myself and my drinking. And I just felt like I finally had a first step. You know, I finally had, like, that whole understanding of my powerlessness over alcohol. Like, I never had that before. Like, I saw that, like, like, really, I will drink again if I don't work this program to the best of my ability. Like, I will. Like, I know that if I, like, went back out, like, thought I didn't need meetings today or thought I didn't need my sponsor, like, I would drink again. Like, I would. Like, there's no question about it. I'm, like, a real alcoholic, you know? And so I just got really involved, and I started calling women. I got the suggestion to call 3 women a day. I hated women. Oh, I hated them. They weren't easy for me to take advantage of, you know? Like, they were scary. I was jealous of all of them. Like, I didn't want to have any relationships with women. Like, I just hung out with, like, a lot of dudes, and, like, that was finally something I was, like, willing to do in sobriety, and now I have, like, the most beautiful relationships with women today. Like, I have, like, good friends like Emma, who came here to see me, and, like, it's pretty cool. And, yeah, so we started working the steps. The first step was, like, finally there. Like, I remember writing, she told me to write my story for her, and I wrote my story all out, and I read it to her, and I finally felt like I was powerless over alcohol, and my life was unmanageable. Like, I finally conceded to my innermost self that I was an alcoholic. And step 2, like, I came in here a pretty blank slate. I didn't have any religious upbringing, you know. I didn't really have any, like, qualms with God when I got here. Like, the most, like, bitterness I could describe is I thought, like, I associated God with, like, youth groups, and I thought they were kind of hokey, and, like, I thought it was weird. Like, that was, like, pretty much as, like, deep as we got, you know. And, like, the alcohol, and we agnostics, they describe it as, like, the great persuader, you know, because, like, I don't know, I was just, like, so done, you know, and, like, people were telling me I had to pray. Like, my sponsor suggested that I pray, and I just started praying, and that's how I started to form a relationship with God. I just started praying, and I saw that Alcoholics Anonymous worked for you guys, and since I finally related with alcoholism and knew that you guys knew what I had, I just, like, believed it would work for me, too. Like, I was, like, a little bit open-minded, and that's what my second step looked like. And the third step, at first, was me deciding to work the rest of the steps. I've always felt like a kind of slow study with the third step, like giving my will and my life up to the care of God, you know. It's kind of vague. Like, it's always kind of confused me a little bit. And I remember I was 2 months sober, and I was at an AA social event, and some guy was like, I've never not felt taken care of. And just, like, I just was, like, so angry at him. I was like, I'd never feel taken care of. Like, what do you mean? Because I've, like, lived my entire life, like, trying to get what Sarah thinks Sarah needs, like, trying to wrest satisfaction out of life that I only manage well, feeling really anxious, feeling like, oh, I never get what I want, you know. And then this guy's telling me he never feels not taken care of. Like, it was just really baffling to me. And the third step has made sense to me, has changed for me, like, over time, you know. A lot of it for me today is, like, just listening to other people's ideas, because, like, my head is, like, a fiction writer, you know? Like, none of my ideas are good. Like, my perception of life is just so skewed, and I just need another person to run my ideas by. Like, listening to another person, that's a good way for me to, like, turn my will and my life over to the care of God. Otherwise, I'm, like, running on me and, like, what I want and, like, doing whatever I want, and that never ends up good. Like, I've gotten myself into some run the gamut with it in my sobriety, just, like, my self-will. Like, I had a really hard time with it this year, actually, and, like, it's also, like, taking the next right action, you know? Like, if I'm, like, I don't even remember. Like, I started doing living amends with my family fairly early on. We would get dinner, like, once a week, and I just, like, was crazy about AA, and it was, like, I would feel like I would be at dinner, and I feel like I'd have to, like, rush to the meeting to be there an hour early. It was just, like, simple stuff, like, just, like, sit with your parents and be present and, like, start repairing your relationships. Don't feel like you need to rush out, you know, like, next right action. Like, am I going to be, like, kind to this person who pissed me off, or am I going to react to them, you know? just, like, you know, it doesn't have to be, like, super complicated, but, you know, just stuff like that. And, like, I do feel taken care of today. Like, I really do. I haven't always felt taken care of in sobriety, particularly if I'm, like, running on self-will. I'm not going to feel taken care of, you know. But I do feel taken care of. I do definitely feel like my higher power is, like, looking out for me. And, like, no matter what if I don't get what I think I want, like, definitely God has a bigger and better plan than I could imagine. Because I know that, like, even, like, the things that I think will make me happy never actually do. And the fourth step, I did 2 4-steps. One was when I was in and out. And that one was, like, about as deep as a puddle. I remember, like, my resentments. Like, first column, girl in AA. Second column, they hate me. Fourth column, I deserve it. Like, that was, like, what was on my 4th step. And I actually asked my ex-boyfriend during that time period to fill out my sex conduct questions for me. I don't suggest doing that. It's really not good. I really don't suggest doing that. I wasn't very honest on it, needless to say. It was kind of not a good four step. But this time around, I was like really willing to do anything anybody told me. So I wrote I was the most honest that I possibly could on that four step that I wrote this time. And I read it to my sponsor, and then I meditated after. I didn't have like a burning bush experience with my fourth and fifth step. I was kind of sad that I didn't, but I got a closer relationship with my sponsor, and that was good. And I started to see some patterns that I just repeatedly had. Like, I started to see my part. And, like, I think it's so cool that I can see my part today because, like, I was always the victim. It was always everyone else's fault, like, little poor little me, you know. And then, like, when I wrote, you know, my four step and when I continue to write inventories, I get to see that I'm actually not a very nice girl. Like, I'm not, like... And there's, like, a lot of freedom in that, though, because it's, like, I'm not, like, you know, subject to like, the pains of the rest of the world. Like, I'm actually sort of at fault, and that means I can, you know, ask a higher power to, like, help relieve me of these defects, and then I can change and things can possibly go better. I felt like that was hopeful. I felt like seeing my part was a pretty cool thing, and, like, I still do. And then 6 and 7, I don't know, I live in them constantly, you know. It's, like... my character defects, it's just like instincts out of control, you know. I really have to keep an eye out for them. I don't know. I try and like say the 7-step prayer every morning. I try and like take 10-step inventories and keep an eye out for my character defects. The ones that were killing me went away pretty early on, you know, like pretty blatant things. But I still struggle with them on like a daily basis, and I just have to like keep being honest about them. There have been defects in sobriety that I've been like really unwilling to like do anything about. And I've, like, run the gamut with that, you know, like, myself, well, like I talked about earlier, but it's, like, character building over comfort seeking that they talk about. Like, am I going to decide to, like, be character building, like, try and live in God's will and, like, love and kindness and tolerance? Am I going to try and live in that? And, like, or am I going to try and live in Sarah's shit? And, like, I've, like, they say the pain is the touchstone of spiritual growth, and that's been my experience with, like, 6 and 7. Like, I'm not somebody where someone's, like, you should really stop doing that. Like, it's probably bad. And it's like, yes, ma'am. You know, I'm not someone who's like that. I'm someone who, like, hits my head over a wall a million times, you know. The 8th and 9th step I got into pretty quickly. I wrote my 8th step at, like, 5 months sober. My sponsor really rushed me through the steps, and I'm grateful for it because I was dying, you know. So I didn't like writing my 8th step. I didn't like looking at all of that. I really didn't. I wrote it in about 3 days because I was, like, still super fresh and willing, and also it was just, like, a painful experience. Like, I really saw the amount of damage I caused to my parents, you know. That was, like, the most damage I caused in both of those relationships. Like, those were both, like, 2 pages long. Like, I stole so much peace of mind. I stole their money, you know. I wasn't a daughter for them. I never, like, was communicative with them. I never told them where I was. I just, like, made their life hell, you know, and, like, they spent, like, years and years, like, worrying about Sarah, and it was hard for me to, like, look at that, you know, because, like, it's just, like, wild getting sober, and then all of a sudden, it's like, whoa, like, I really wasn't nice, like, I've just been living in delusion, and, like, I have a lot to repair, you know, I still have a lot to repair, like, it doesn't happen overnight, it's not like, hey, my 8 grand, the wind stopped blowing, like, early, like, the one in the book, you know, it's not like that, and, like, I started doing, like, family dinners with them early on to make amends to them. I didn't make amends to my parents until, like, a couple months ago, honestly, because I, like, still live in their house, and my sponsor didn't suggest that I make amends to them if I still lived in their house, but I did. I ended up making direct amends to them, but it was a lot of stuff, like, just showing up when they asked me to, you know. I have a mentally ill brother, and he has, like, schizophrenia and bipolar, and he's, like, really bad off, and he got kicked out of UVA when I got sober, and he's like living in their basement, and he yells at them a lot, and like he's like a kind of a terror around the house, and he's sick, you know, he won't take his meds, it's not their fault, but like they spent all these years worrying about me, like the least I can do is make them myself not a worry anymore, you know, so I just try and show up as much as possible and try and be like emotional support to them, like especially when they're dealing with something hard, you know, I just try and do that for them, and yeah, I went out with my mom today. We went to Target. We're remodeling my room. It was pretty cool. It's cool having that, you know, back. I didn't know my parents were nice people. I was so mean to them, you know. But now we have, like, a pretty good relationship, and I'm really, really grateful for that. And it's, like, the best thing sobriety has given me, it's not, like, the job. You know, it's not the boyfriend. It's none of that. It's that. It's having, like, my family back, you know. And, like, when people used to say that on the podium, I'd be, like, you really find that exciting, you know? Like, but it really, like why, who are you? Like, you're that selfless? Like, no, but it is. Like, it's just, like, the relationships I have with friends and, like, family. It's, like, so cool that I can, like, do that. And I made direct amends to my dad at a coffee shop, and, like, that was, like, an absolutely beautiful experience. Like, I felt, like, so much lighter after I made direct amends to my dad. And, he, you know, him and my mom both said, they were, like, we just want you to stay on, like, a good path. Well, my mom asked me with the money I offered her to go get a haircut. So she asked me, she was like, you need a haircut. You can just go and get it with that money. And it was kind of funny. But it's stuff like that. And, like, I don't know. I've done a number of my other amends. And it's just, like, really cool. I feel a little bit lighter every time. Like, the first girl I had on my A-step that I was going to make amends to after I read it to my sponsor, she actually ended up, like, reaching out to me, like, after, like, a, right after I read it to my sponsor. And I felt like it was, like, a really weird, like God moment, you know? It's like when God shows up in, like, little ways. It's, like, my favorite. I love when that happens, when he just pops his head in, you know? And I think that, like, a promise I really relate to is we will intuitively know how to handle situations that used to baffle us. I've been, like, thinking about that one a lot lately because, I don't know if this is, like, a tangent. I have a lot of time to talk, so it's kind of like, okay. But I've been starting to, like, I guess, like everything baffled me when I was brand new, you know? Like, going to the grocery store baffled me. Like, going to a meeting baffled me. Like, talking to a friend baffled me. Everything baffled me. Everything was so scary. And, like, lately I've just been, like, I had, like, three big decisions to make last week. No, it was two. And, like, I just intuitively knew how to handle them. And it was, like, pretty cool. Like, one of them, my old boss was, like, I got this cool job and I really, really like it. And there's a lot of opportunity for growth there. And, like, my old boss was, like, offering me a job. And I just, like, kind of intuitively knew I, like, just had to say no to him. And it was like, it's like little things like that. Like, that would have baffled me before, but now I just kind of feel like I know how to, like, finally becoming like an adult. Like, you know, I know how to, like, operate, and that's, like, how I relate to it. And it's like all because of AA, because before I would just be like, nah, I don't know. You know, I need to call my sponsor. And I did call my sponsor, but anyway, in step 10, like, I do have a system for it. Me and my friend Sarah talk on the phone every night. We call it 10 at 10. We don't always talk at 10 p.m. It means 10-step inventory at 10 o'clock. And we always go through the questions on page 86, and that's actually part of the 11th step, but we do it for 10 steps. And it's pretty cool because it keeps me accountable. It keeps me talking about my inventory and looking at myself. And, like, we've, like, really gotten a strong friendship because we started doing that. And, like, it's, like, a routine I like to have because, like, if I don't do a 10 step for a while, I start to feel, like, a little weird. I don't know. Like, I think it's important. I was reading the 10th step and the 12 and 12 today, and it's just so important for me to, like, you know, stay vigilant, you know? It's like that character building over comfort seeking thing. Like, I just have to, like, keep looking at myself and, like, what I could have, like, done better during the day, you know? Because, like, otherwise I can easily, like, fly off the handle and start rationalizing things and whatever, you know? But it's also good having someone to read it to who tells me, Sarah, you should do this, you know? It's like, I don't know what to do. Then my 11th step, I meditate every morning, and that's pretty cool. I do on awakening every morning. It's definitely good. It helps me to, like, ground myself before the day. I try and envision myself getting into situations that would usually trouble me and how I might react and, like, how I might operate in it. And I try and say, like, the 3rd step prayer and the 7th step prayer. That works pretty well for me. And try and pray to be patient, tolerant, kindly, and loving, and say some other set prayers. And I just trying to go, it helps me go into my day with, like, a good attitude, but, like, a little bit more pause, like, less things bother me if I meditate. And I always try and plan helping somebody. You know, I try and plan how I'm going to help somebody, how I'm going to help another alcoholic, too. That's, like, something I meditate about, like, how I'm going to reach a handout. And the 12th step has always been, like, important to me. Like, I started, like, helping people when I was pretty early on. Like, I had a car, so that pretty much helped. Like, I just would drive people to meetings, help them get to the solution. You know, it helped me make a lot of friendships. Like, I give a lot of people rides. And, like, just, like, I don't know. I'm so grateful that now I can, like, take a couple seconds out of thinking about myself to, like, listen to somebody else, like, talk about what's going on with them. You know, like, a little bit of a second, like, to try and be helpful. Like, they have, like, a split second to do that. Like, I'm so grateful for that because, like, it's like literally like some of the most beautiful experiences I've had in sobriety are just like, you know, those moments when you're doing something for somebody else without expecting anything in return. And I'm not good at it, you know, I'm really not. But like things I can like think about that have been like awesome, you know, like I've started working with like these girls at like this H&I. Like I drive these two girls rehab to meetings all the time and they're great, you know, like I like staying close to like people. Like, I really love H&I, I don't know. It's just, like, people that are, like, have been, like, close to the fire lines recently, just, like, hearing what they have to say and really trying to help myself. I'm really trying to help them, you know. I think that's awesome. I've sponsored a couple of people in sobriety. Not a lot of my sponsees stick around. I do try, though, and I stay sober because of it. I took one girl from steps 1 through 5, and that was a really cool experience. Like, I love reading the book with girls. Like, I really love reading the book. And, like, I really love hearing them because, like, I'm not that far removed from a drink. Like, I get 2 years in, like, a week and a half, and it's, like, I'm not that far removed. But, like, I still forget, you know, I still forget what it was like because everything's completely different. Like, I have a new life. So, like, it's really cool for me to, like, hear, you know, people that have been closer to it and, like, to relate to them. And I really like just, like, I don't know. I just love Alcoholics Anonymous. And, definitely, it's done, like, so many great things for me and so many great things for, like, other people. And I want to see how much time I have. I didn't do bad. All right. Oh, that's pretty cool. And we're going to end early, guys. I'm sorry. I don't have a lot else to say, but thanks for letting me be here, Sam, and I had a good time. So thanks.